about those Wildcats. What a game last night. Unbelievable.
There's a lot of people crying in Vegas right now because right. The line was on Duke, and the brackets are all screwed up because a lot of people had Duke in their brackets, and now some guy's going to make a lot of money.
Prediction here on the Buckmaster Show. 3 more games like we played last night, we will bring home a second national title. But this is the Buckmaster Show. We are wrapping up week 12. I welcome you to the show for Friday, March 18th, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. On Friday, we have our Friday Focus, bringing in a newsmaker into the studio by questioning from myself and one of our reporters, roundtable regulars this week. It's Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. And this week's Friday Focus features a newsmaker interview with State Senator Frank Antonori, a Republican representing District 30 at the legislature. Senator, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks, Bill.
Tell me, there seems to be a conflict here. The governor has her budget. You and your colleagues in the Senate have passed another one. How much of a divide is there at this point?
Well, I would say there was one a couple of weeks ago, and there was a lot of posturing. But since the Senate passed its budget, the governor has come to the table and has been working with us really well to come to a budget compromise where we will then amend that budget over in the House and then send it back to the Senate for just a final read and concurrence, and then give it to her. And we're hoping that she'll sign it. It's looking like she's leaning that way.
Because she had that piece in the Republic, the op-ed piece, that this is the budget. I do not go for any more cuts like the Senate is advocating.
Well, she has agreed that we will have a structurally balanced budget. If we don't have a structurally balanced budget, we will be there till October. There is no Republican in Phoenix right now that will vote for another budget with gimmicks in it. So the Senate budget doesn't have any rollovers, doesn't have any borrowing. It is a structurally balanced budget. And it will be the first one in years, probably like 5-6 years since we had one. So she has agreed to that. But what she hasn't agreed to is where the reductions in spending have been made with regard to the Senate's budget. And we're willing to negotiate with her to change and adjust those numbers.
In years past, budget bills were presented by the governor and the Senate and the House generally had their own bills that would be presented in the open, and then they would be divided up, go to the different committees. If you were going to make cuts or increase spending in health care, it would go to a health committee. Same thing would be for education committees and the like. And now for the past, it's almost like a decade now, most of the budgets are being negotiated with governors or with leadership behind closed doors and then presented in a single day. Like, you pass the budget bill in a single day, or the Senate bill. Why is that? Why is there all the secrecy now, and why are budget bills kind of getting rammed through rather than spending a long time going through the legislative process?
Well, the first thing is we started working on the budget on January 15th, and we were putting 2 to 3 hours a day in that budget. We were meeting with JLBC staff. We were meeting with the governor's staff. We had Senate and House staff in there. We had members and leadership from the various committees in the House and Senate meeting, and we worked on that. Most people understand that if you start throwing stuff out there and it isn't going to be actually what's going to be voted on, it causes a lot of chaos with regard to actually structuring a budget, because you get all these emotions up, rumors start flying, and nobody really gets any substantive reforms or actual hard numbers down on a piece of paper. So we spent the first 2 months developing that budget to get those hard numbers, and then we shop it to the members and say, hey, look, here's where we're at. What's your heartburn? Are you good with this? Are you not good with this? Let's put it down and then let's go and try to get this budget out. Now that budget's out there. What was going on before is those budgets were all coordinated, and in the last two I did, at least, they would go down in a one-week period. The House would vote. The next day the Senate would vote. It would go to the governor. Now the budget's out. You know where the Senate's budget is. You've seen the governor's budget. The governor's budget's been out. Both of those are available for the public to look at. The public is looking at them. They're weighing in. They're calling their members. They're calling the governor. They're calling the House. And that is part of the process. You know where we're at. There's nothing hidden about it. The budget's out there for everybody to see. It is not final, and it won't be final probably for about another 2 weeks. So there's plenty of time. There's nothing being hidden. As a matter of fact, I would rather do it the way we did, because now you see our budget numbers. There's nothing hidden. It's on the website. You can go in there. You can look at ours, compare it to the governor's, and people can do a comparison. And now the House is going to have an opportunity, and they'll have their budget go out. And this will be a 3-week, 4-month process, or 4-week process, and it'll be out in the open.
I want to follow up, leave the budget actually for a moment. You
sure.
voted in favor of most of Senate President Russell Pierce's package on immigration bills. Is there too much emphasis still on immigration legislation in this session?
Well, you know, the public demands something be done with illegal immigration. I mean, there's just no doubt. If you do a survey, at least in my district, it's probably in the top three things that they want done. Balance the budget is one.
The rest
get the economy
in Green
going
Valley
to,
and right. your area.
Well, especially down there where they have a lot of the, you know, we had Agent Terry shot just down the road from Green Valley there, just north of Rio Rico. So, yeah, that all is part of their – they want something done about that. The question, I think, is what can the state do? And what should the federal government be doing? And that's the debate that's currently going on up there. And the bills that I supported were within the purview and the authority of the state. We regulate the issuance of driver's license and vehicle registrations. We control the school system in this state. We control basically the hospitals with the degree of the policies that involve with that. And the other two that I wasn't in favor of were, I believe, outside the purview of the state. The state has no authority to define its own criteria for citizenship. And I think that had that gone to court, there would be no way that we could justify that because it's in the Constitution twice, not just once. It's in Article 1, Section 8 that the Congress shall define a uniform standard for naturalization. And then it says in the 14th Amendment that no state shall make any laws or rules abridging the rights of people under the 14th Amendment. So I just don't think that was going anywhere, and I opposed those for that reason. I didn't think they were constitutional.
What was your reaction to the editorial in the Arizona Star the other day by Steve Kozacek criticizing some of the bills that you've proposed that trying to change the way the cities are able to govern themselves?
Well, I really feel for Steve. And, you know, he's in a tight spot down there. He's battling an entrenched bureaucracy and a mindset that's been basically causing a lot of grief in this city. And he's frustrated. You know, and he's frustrated because he feels now that everybody's ganging up on him. He's got his votes and his reforms that he's trying to get through going down on 5-1 votes, and now he feels like the state's chiming in and beating up on him. So he lashed out a little bit because he's really having a rough time. He's been there 2 years. He had all these ideas about reining in spending and getting the budget done and reforming the city government, and he hasn't been able to do much on it. We now have, I thought, you know, he would be a little bit more happier about what we were trying to do. We're trying to give him some of those tools to do exactly what he campaigned on, which was try to go in and find more efficient, less cost, less spending ways to deliver services and try to reform those things. And that's all those bills do. Those bills just basically say, hey, look, if you can do landscaping and you got a private sector guy that has a landscaping business that can do it for 30% less than the city's doing, you owe it to the taxpayers to take that look and maybe exercise that option. The bill doesn't mandate they do anything other than do a cost analysis of the service they're currently providing against the private sector potential service provider. And if they want to give them the contract, they give them the contract. If they don't, they just got to put up on the website what it's costing the taxpayers now, what it could cost the taxpayers, and then an explanation why they do or do not award the contract. That's all the bill does.
It's about 9:15. I think this might be a good time to take a commercial break. Hear from some of the fine sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, and we will be back with lots more to talk with State Senator Frank Antonori and Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. So stay with us.
Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn. Luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroAmorePizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
And it's 20 minutes past the hour. This is Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show. State Senator Frank Antonori is our Friday Focus guest. Mark Evans is with me from TucsonCitizen.com. Let's talk a little politics, Senator Antonori.
Sure.
How about your name has come up for possibly running for Congress. Is that still in the cards, or are you looking at it, or
well,
where are you?
I'm holding off on making any decisions. I'm going to wait for the redistricting commission to finish their work and see where all the lines are drawn. It's no sense getting all spooled up and fired up and then find out that you're in a district that just isn't going to work out. So my guys, I've met with my campaign team a couple times. We've had this discussion. I'm getting a lot of people asking me to step in and do this, but you know, there's a couple factors out there that I'm waiting to see. One, I'd like to see, Congresswoman Gifford's status, and if she's recovering then and able to represent the district, in all likelihood I'll have to consider whether or not it's worth running, because I think that in light of what happened to her, she's going to be very difficult to beat if she's able to represent the district. And then on the other side, if she's drawn in or drawn out, will be the decision on whether or not I run. And the Independent Redistricting Commission is going to have a lot of say on whether or not I decide to take a shot at Congress.
I'll toss one in your wheelhouse for you. Why not raise a tax to balance the budget rather than cut the budget to balance the budget?
Well, politically, it's impossible. Okay. You require a two-thirds vote under Prop 108. You'll never get that. Just that simple. And the voters have been very clear, particularly with the election at the federal level and the election here at the state, that they're tired of the spending and they want government to rein it in and they don't want new taxes.
But in May, they passed a tax, though, the tax themselves, to trying to preserve education.
Yeah, and it
funding.
Made matters worse because it was supposed to bring in $960 million. It brought in a little over $700 and it created another $250 hole in the deficit. So it was actually, it hurt the state by doing that. And then it also created a misconception. And I think that part of the campaign on that was very misleading to the voters out there, that somehow that this was a firewalled fund and that it wouldn't be used for anything other than K through 12. And that's not the case. It is a general revenue tax, goes into the general fund. It's subject to appropriation just like any other part of the budget is. And it actually fell short of what it was supposed to bring in. But now people believe that funding is somehow protected, even though it fell $250 million short and didn't bring in the revenue. I mean, if you really want to be honest, we should immediately go in and whatever the proportion was in that appropriation last year in the budget, we should immediately reduce those by the amount that the tax fell short because it didn't bring in the money that it was supposed to bring in. But, you know, there's a misconception out there that somehow this was going to be the saving grace for all these entitlements out there, and it just wasn't the case. It actually made matters worse because now not only do we have to make up that shortfall, but we have to cut spending to make up that shortfall that it didn't bring in.
Now, you're a co-sponsor on the flat tax proposal in Arizona.
Sure.
There's a JLBC report that shows what the effect of the current percentage for the flat tax that's being proposed through that's passed the House and I think under consideration now in the Senate. That tax, according to that JLBC analysis, would make people who make less than $100,000, they would actually be paying a little bit more tax, and the people who make more than $100,000 would be making less.
Yeah, the average is going to be about $200 more a year.
But for most Arizonans, though, it's going to be a tax increase.
Well, I'm not going to say it's not. You're probably right. Here's the deal. The progressive tax code in this country is destroying the country. It is creating an opportunity to wage class warfare, and it is shrinking. The number of taxpayers are shrinking, and less people are paying taxes, and the poor people that are paying more taxes are paying a larger percentage of those taxes. And it'll eventually fail if we don't do something. So a flat tax spreads the burden of the state services that everybody demands equally amongst the population, and everybody is an investor in the state of Arizona. And when you get rid of the progressive tax and you say everybody's a taxpayer, everybody's a shareholder based on the percentage of income, then everybody now, when people start talking about raising taxes, will pay more attention. And when people talk about out of control government spending because they're actually paying taxes, they'll start paying more attention. It is something that the founding fathers believed in. They believed in a low, broad-based tax. And that's exactly what this is. This is a 2.5% tax spread evenly amongst the population. So everybody shares in the burden of supporting these services equally based on the percentage of income that they generate.
Earlier in our interview, you mentioned that immigration was one of the, I believe you said, the three most important issues to the constituents in District 30. What about weapons? Where does that fit in? Are your constituents concerned about that?
Well, they're concerned if there's an effort to limit firearms freedom and their right to keep and bear arms. So for the most part, they don't really make that big of an issue out of it unless there's legislation trying to inhibit it or limit it. Generally, they don't oppose any legislation that expands it either. I wouldn't put it in the top three, but it is something that's on their radar, and it is a very, very intense debate when you throw guns into the mix, because there are a lot of people that like the right to keep and bear arms, and they have a lot of pull and a lot of influence, and they are a demographic that shows up at the polls on election days. And if you get them upset, and you can cut all the spending you want and stop all the tax increases, but if you run a bill to limit their ability to keep and bear arms, you will likely not survive a primary next time around.
But would you say that most of them would be in favor of weapons on campus? That seems to be such a high-octane issue.
That whole thing has been framed wrong. What it is, it's the right to self-defense. And should the government provide you either adequate protection or should they leave you exposed by a rule that says you can't protect yourself? And that's what that whole debate is about. So do you have to, by law, disarm yourself and expose yourself and eliminate your ability to defend yourself simply because you walk onto a college campus? And I would say most people would say, if you framed it that way, would say, no, I still have a right to defend myself. And that's basically the argument that's going on there. If government wants to do that, and we have SB 1201, which is the omnibus bill, basically says government can do that. If government says You know, this is a gun-free zone. They have to provide a secure environment to make sure no one else can bring a gun in there. And if they can provide that protection, then they can disarm you. But if they aren't able to protect you, if they don't provide that environment, then they have no right to disarm you and limit your right to self-defense.
You've proposed and signed on to a number of bills that challenge federal authority in Arizona. What's the goal there? Why are you proposing those bills?
Well, it's called federalism. And if we taught civics in school and people understood that the federal government derives their authority from the states, and the states grant limited authority for certain things to the federal government, and that if the federal government exceeds that limited authority, it is within the right of the states, because they gave them that authority in the first place, to say no. You know, you're exceeding the authority that we granted you in the Constitution. You're not supposed to be dictating these things. These are state-level issues, and you should stay out of our business, because the Constitution was derived by the states and granted that limited authority to the federal government.
And they're mostly symbolic, though, right? You don't really hold out hope that any of these will be actually go into law and have effect.
What's going on, Mark, is the discussion is starting. And you're now starting to see members of Congress realize that government is going too far when it's exceeding its authority under the Constitution. And there are efforts now to reel in a lot of that, like particularly Obamacare, where there is a huge effort now to reverse what was done with regard to that. And I think that you'll see, as we continue to raise these issues and keep it on the front burner, that the federal government is starting to respond to them.
There is an old adage, no publicity is bad publicity whatever. And the Arizona Daily Star really took a shot at you this morning in an editorial. Does that get under your skin at all?
They have now been relegated to virtual insignificance in my legislative district. And the more they write bad things about me, the more they help me, because my voters are like, Anton Horry must be doing something right. They got the red star fired up. So they think they're hurting me, but they're doing the exact opposite. And if you look at the last election cycle, they pounded me and pounded me and pounded me. I beat Marion McClure 67-33, and then I beat Todd Kaminish basically 60-40. So, I mean, you know, they don't have any impact. And that's why they're squealing like that, because now they know that there's nothing they could really do but scream and holler. They have no impact on the outcome of the elections in District 30. So,
you only got about 2 minutes to go. Mark Evans, quick question for Senator Anton Horry.
Will you run for governor of Baja, Arizona?
I tell you, you know what, Mark? I cannot believe that they honestly believe, if they were to do that, that it would be a Democrat state. Right. If you look the voting demographics of Pima County, and if you were to add in Cochise County, or Santa Cruz County or Yuma County, this would be a Republican state. And if they do that, I will run for the governor of Arizona, because we'll win it. And these guys don't realize it. Their little liberal utopia is really confined to the city limits of the city of Tucson, and mostly downtown Tucson. Once you get outside of that, this is a red county. And literally, as Al Melvin says, you know, we have them surrounded. District 26, 25, and 30 now, totally ring the city, is a total red ring around a tiny little blue dot in central Pima County. And there is no doubt about that.
We've got less than a minute. When will this budget be wrapped up, and when will the legislative session be wrapped up?
Well, we're still shooting for April 30th as the signee die date. It'll probably be plus or minus a week, most likely plus a week or so. And we're shooting for getting the budget out of the House next week and having the governor sign it the week after. So we're hoping to have the budget done end of March.
Frank Anton Horry, State Senator, District 30, thank you for being on the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks a lot.
We'll
and we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with Mark Evans and Jim Nintzel and Dan Shear doing our Friday radio roundtable.
Listen to this.
You're tuned into Tucson's best choice for local talk.
I love it, huh? Little back and forth, witty repartee.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. The core of one of the reactors at the Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan may be damaged. CNN's Martin Savage in Tokyo tells us containment water that injured three workers had 10,000 times the normal amount of radiation.
The reason that is so problematic is because of all six nuclear reactors that are out there at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear facility, number three is the only one that has MOX. It's a mixed fuel, and it's a fuel of uranium, and plutonium. That is highly dangerous stuff.
The United Arab Emirates will send 12 planes to help enforce the no-fly zone in Libya. Also, Turkey agreed to allow the use of one of its military bases. NATO is preparing to take over command of the no-fly zone from the United States. Witnesses say 15 people were killed in a protest in southern Syria today. Right now on Wall Street, the Dow is up 85 points. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Hey there, how's it going? My name's Eric, and I work at Lowe's. Log on to Lowe's.com for incredible store-wide savings now through March 28th. Find special values on everything from shop vacs to paint, even appliances, all at Lowe's.com. Then head to your nearest Lowe's store where you can find 29 different DeWalt power tools at 15% off, like an 18-volt compact drill. Lowe's, let's build something together. Offers valid 3/23/11 to 3/28/11. DeWalt prices already reflect discount. Some restrictions apply while supplies last. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only.
I'm adding another crew. My business is building. My marketing is deluxe.
My boutique is setting new trends in fashion and sales. My marketing is deluxe.
I just opened my third fitness studio. My business is gaining strength. My marketing is deluxe.
Use deluxe online marketing tools to help your business grow. Deluxe for business.
Deluxe for my business.
For my business.
For my business.
Deluxe for business. Visit deluxe.com/marketing.
Right now, the Home Depot has 10% off Energy Star qualified appliances of $397 or more. Plus free haul away and delivery that's really free. So you save money when you buy, save when they're delivered, and then keep right on saving with lower energy bills. We're lowering the cost of saving every day with 10% off Energy Star appliances. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Valid through March 30th, U.S. only. See store for details.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KJLL 1330.
and on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. It's time for our Friday radio roundtable. Joining me on the roundtable, Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com, Jim Nintzel from the Tucson Weekly, and on our Buckmaster Show live line is Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Dan calling in from Green Valley. Jim, in the interview we just did with Frank Antonori, Governor, publicly it looks like Governor Brewer and the Senate leadership are at odds over this budget, but Frank Antonori says it doesn't look like the two sides are that far apart.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out over the next few weeks. Certainly the budget passed by the Senate is as severe a budget as we have ever seen in the state and will do tremendous damage. I give you an example. I talked with the folks at the Parks Department this week, and they said that part of that budget only gives them $7.5 million to spend. It doesn't matter whether they bring in $100 million in gate fees. They can only spend $7.5 million. The problem is last year when their budget was cut, they were told to go out and make partnerships to keep parks open, and they did that. But their obligations under those partnerships is to spend $10 million. So what it does is basically throw another boulder in the path of just keeping the parks open. On top of that, it sweeps a number of the funds that the parks have, which, again, have been brought in through gate fees or other sources of revenue. It takes that money away from them. It makes it almost impossible to keep up with payroll. At the same time, you have incredible capital needs in many of these parks is they need to be taken care of, and they're not being taken care of. Another thing in there is they tell you that you have to set up a privatization and offer up a few of these parks by a certain date in, I believe, February of next year. That doesn't exactly strengthen your negotiating hand, so it's not even good capitalism to tell them that you have to have a deal by a certain time, because that what makes the other person on the other side deal in good faith if they know you have to sign a deal. So there's a whole bunch of problems, and that's just one tiny slice of the budget, which, you know, we could go into great detail, but it would use up the rest of your show, so we probably should not, and probably bore a lot of your listeners when we start talking about these numbers. But
the indication that the senator seemed to give in terms of the negotiations with the governor was that the legislature was probably going to have to give back some of the money to education, and then they would get some more cuts in health care. It doesn't matter how they end up balancing it. Somebody's going to get stuck by the budget. We're either going to have less money for schools or less money for healthcare. My guess is we're going to have less money for healthcare. And no matter what, they're going to stick it to the universities.
Dan Scheer, let's bring you in here from Green Valley. Some of your thoughts on this budget battle.
Well, you know what Jim just mentioned was interesting, because I'm going to be heading down to Tubac next week to look at what they have done when private entities took over Tubac State Presidio Park, and it is an incredible success story. There's a lot of ground still to be covered, but they've done a good job with it, so it can be done. The real question is, what are the state's priorities? And I think probably before parks, it is public safety and education, and how are we going to get there? And I thought it was very interesting on your show yesterday, Bill, what Doug Ducey was saying about the state of the state and how there has been definitely a turnaround, but we still can't afford to pay the bills coming due. That's an exact quote from him.
But, you know, with the parks are the ones that are bringing in money. They've brought in money through their gate fees. They have successfully collected tens of millions of dollars in their bank accounts, and then the state came in and took that money away and then said, you can't support yourselves. They were supporting themselves.
Some of the parks, not all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well,
that's
right,
exactly,
but yeah, overall you have a system where they had built up a great deal of money in their bank accounts until it was taken away. These are not a drain on the tax funds, and there are rural communities that depend on these parks, such as the one in Tubac. And yes, they do have a temporary partnership with some of the businesses down there to keep it up and going, but that's not really a long-term solution. And I think what's amazing to me about this is that people seem to think, like, oh, you got to choose between healthcare and parks because parks are pulling money away from healthcare. In fact, it's the parks money that's being taken away from the parks that are supporting healthcare, and this whole notion that you need to privatize them in order for them to make money isn't really true. And there's a lot of parks that aren't going to make money. And what's going to happen to them? They're going to be abandoned.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, this park would not be open today if it were not for this group. And so it is something that is working for us. This one was not making money. One was not doing well. And now it can help out the community and can be a light for this community because of what's been done. I understand what you're saying, But maybe in a lot of cases, we do need this parks money to help out other areas that just are not doing as well. I understand it seems a little bit unfair, but when it comes to pumping money into education and public safety, maybe this is what we need to do.
Well, I think the significance of parks is not the total amount of money that gets spent on it, because in terms of the overall budget, it's completely insignificant. What it does, though, is it cuts across political lines, and that people really enjoy and like their parks, and when they see it, it has a direct effect on people's perceptions of their government, because government can be this kind of amorphous thing that they don't really have that much interaction with. But when they start seeing that there are going to be teachers laid off and there's going to be 40 kids, 50 kids in classrooms, when they start seeing, you know, they can't get into the emergency room because the emergency rooms are hammered because people don't have health care, you know, when they see the counties jacking up the property tax rates to pay for all the services that are being transferred on the counties, then I think you're going to see people that there's going to be a rebellion. I think this budget is a cut too far, and I think there's going to be quite the backlash on this. And if the Democrats can get up off the mat, we may see some changes in the next election, or perhaps the election cycle after that, with redistricting on the Republican control of Arizona.
Yeah. They'll blame it on Obama.
I'm sure they will.
and win even more seats next time.
State Representative Matt Hines resigned as the House Minority Whip. What's that all about, Jim?
Well, I think what was going on was Representative Hines was working very well with some Republican members up at the legislature. He was getting a number of his bills through. He got one bill through that banned the marijuana substitute spice in Arizona. He's working on one that would restore hospice care. And since his bills are still alive, and that's unusual for a Democrat, there were other members who felt like he was working a little too hard on his own bills and not enough on the whole team's bills. And so there was some grumbling and some dissatisfaction with him in that position, and so he chose to step down rather than face the wrath of the caucus.
Well, the job of the whip is to keep the members in line and keep them all, you know, rally their votes and the like. And there's not a lot that the Democrats can really accomplish, considering the numbers that they're up against. So it's probably a thankless job. I wouldn't blame them for resigning it.
Dan Shearer, the city of Tucson's considering all mail-in elections. That's been going on down in your neck of the woods in Green Valley for a while. Is it successful?
It does. It does work for Sarita. We're right in the middle of a town council election. It's easy. It's you know, I think it throws a curveball at some of the candidates, because now they're playing to an electorate that they're not quite sure, have they already voted? Are they, you know, going to really be able to? Is it worth getting the message out? And we used to see, at least in journalism, you see the campaigns build toward the final day, toward election day, but now it's a little bit more spread out, and it's kind of an interesting dynamic. But yes, it has worked down here, and it's been good for us.
Yeah, vote by mail has been expanding, obviously, since the early 1990s. I remember writing about this, you know, 10 or 15 years ago and looking at the trends. And clearly a lot of people prefer to do the vote by mail. Certainly some efforts up at the legislature to hamstring that, saying that you had to have your ballot notarized before you could get it.
Because of all those illegal immigrants that are voting.
Yeah. Vote by mail. And, you know, how many early ballots you can have in your hand at any one time. You know, I typically will drop off my wife's ballot at the same time I drop mine off, and that I think that would remain legal, but there's questions about how many of those you could scoop up and carry around at any one time.
I used to be a big supporter of all-mail elections. It was Oro Valley has all-mail elections, and I thought it was a great way to increase voter turnout, and anything that got people to vote was good. It's early voting. We have we have voting month now with early voting, where anybody can, you start voting a month before the election happened. And we had a candidate that died. We had another candidate that dropped out after people had already cast their ballots, and that's kind of disenfranchising. So I've become lukewarm about all mail voting. I think if we're all going to be good patriotic American citizens, one day out of the year we ought to be able to get up off our butts and go down to the polling place and cast a ballot.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that it's cheaper too, and that's really what's going to drive a lot of this.
Dan Shearer, while we have you on our Buckmaster Show live line from Green Valley News, there was some news about the proposed Rosemont mine this week. A Toronto firm is putting more money into their investment into Rosemont, from $30 million to $51 million. Is this significant?
Well, I think it's just one more thing that's interesting as we wait for the Forest Service to come forward with the draft environmental impact statement. And I did talk to the Forest Service this morning. Still, the party line is that it's under internal review. They have no timeline on the release of it. But right now what's going on down here, at least, is that Rosemont is, the county is taking its two 3D Rosemont models, and starting April 4th, they're going to be down in Green Valley and Saurita for 3 weeks. Well, we found out that Rosemont also has its own model, so we've invited them to bring it here because the newspaper is one of the sites where it will, the county model will be dropped off. So we're continuing the debate here, but I got to tell you, I think most people have made up their mind on this one.
I imagine the Rosemont model looks remarkably like the Grand Canyon in its beautiful vistas.
You know, I haven't seen it yet, but I just found out they had one, so I called them and I said, hey, bring it on down. We want to keep the debate going. But, you know, there have been some criticisms of the county models, but you know what we say here is you throw it all out at the readers and let them decide.
It's hard to have a mine and not have a hole.
The Grand Canyon is a beautiful place, Mark. It's a gorgeous hole in the ground. There can be many more.
We'll see.
Let's switch now back to the legislature. Arizona Senate President Russell Pierce refuses to apologize to lawmakers who say he circulated a factually suspect letter about Hispanic students during a debate in hopes of getting his immigration bill passed.
Yeah, Russell says this letter was just full of facts and that a poor, good, patriotic American in the form of the substitute teacher is simply being maligned. You got to step back and just say, why would someone read a letter aloud on the Senate floor that was completely unverified without checking with the guy who wrote the letter in the first place? That's absolutely astonishing, given the contents of the letter, when you're saying things like most Mexican kids want to be gang members instead of get an education and that they hate America. You know, you're talking about racism. That is racism.
And the truth of the letter doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether the letter's true or not. What did that have to do with illegal immigration? That was simply vilifying a race of people that somehow illegal immigration is connected to Mexican-American citizens. They have no way of knowing whether the students in that class were illegal immigrants or citizens or not. If they're citizens, what are you reading the letter for in the legislature? Who cares?
Yeah, it's a sign that this legislature is off the tracks. It's astonishing that you would have this going on. You'd have a guy like Scott Bungard, the senator, who this week we learned actually insisted the law enforcement officers couldn't arrest him after he got pulled over during that fight with his girlfriend, and a witness said that he was just walloping on the passenger in the car. You just have to say to yourselves, who are these people making these decisions?
Dan Scheer, you heard our interview earlier in the program with State Senator Frank Antinori saying that immigration issues continue to be one of the top three, certainly in the Green Valley area. Would you agree with him on that?
You know, I do, but I'll tell you what. Right now, everybody is very aware that the state is in trouble financially, and that really is the focus here. In fact, I have a commentary that I'm going to run on Sunday that says, you know what, we're glad that these people appear to be getting past some of this silly immigration stuff that they've been focusing on, because we're in trouble. And whether it's a retirement community, which Green Valley is, or whether Saurita, which is a working community, we all realize that we really need to be focusing on the financial health of the state. Not that these other things are not important, but that's where we need to be focusing right now.
Let's talk, Jim Nintzel and Mark Evans, and Dan, if you'd like to weigh in as well, about the Arizona Republic editorial, where we had 50 or 60 CEOs from prominent Arizona companies saying enough is enough on immigration. Jim Nintzel from the Weekly.
Yeah, well, you do finally have the business community, which has been severely weakened at the Arizona legislature, stepping up and saying, look, we need to get things back on track up here, and we need to stop focusing quite so much on this because it is damaging the reputation of the state in a lot of people's eyes, and it's making it more difficult to sustain business, to bring business to the state, and a lot of other things. You know, there's all this talk of ethnic studies is teaching the overthrow of the United States. And I just got to say, I think I've heard more talk about overthrow of the United States out of the state lawmakers than I have out of the ethnic studies program. And getting back to Lori Klein's letter, I mean, I can't say it's surprising that Hispanic students might feel as though they're not valued in this state when, in fact, you have state senators reading letters about them saying that they hate America.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the census numbers that have come out, the fastest growing segment of the population nationally and in Arizona are Hispanics. They are citizens. And the problem is when you see an illegal immigrant, that's the problem. You can't. When you look at someone, you can't tell what their citizenship status is. So you have to have some way to ask them. And who's getting asked? American citizens who are Hispanic, and they're starting to resent it because they're being treated differently than the rest of us. And we're going to see a backlash. If they get organized politically, which they have had historically, have had low voter turnout for the last decade or so, if they become active politically, it's going to be transformative in Arizona. And it's as a result, it's because they are being, I hate to use the rhetoric of the term, but it's a form of oppression.
We're going to have to run. Jim Nintzel from the Tucson Weekly, Dan Scheer on the Buckmaster Show, Live Line from the Green Valley News, and Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
Can't believe we didn't get to talk about that flat tax. All right.
And what about those Wildcats?
How about those Wildcats?
We got to go. Thank you. If they play...
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of 5 major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Cañada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
That music signals it's time to begin the weekend, and usually with us on Weekend Watch is Tucson publicist Matt Russell, the host of On the Menu Live, Thursdays at 5 here on KJLL. But Matt actually got an earlier start on the weekend, and he's already taken off and beginning his weekend. Filling in for us, Morgan Okrati from Many Hats Advertising. Morgan, how you doing?
I'm great.
great. How are you?
Doing real well. We've got a busy weekend starting actually tonight.
Yeah, tonight there's going to be the 6th annual Taste of Arizona event at La Encantada. It's tonight from 5:30 to 8:30, and it's really a great way to spend a Friday evening. Guests can head over to the main courtyard and enjoy appetizers from some of Tucson's favorite restaurants, including Jack's Kitchen, The Abbey, North Blanco. And there's also going to be appetizers from Vero More, the guys who, you know, serve some of Tucson's best pizza.
And they also are one of our sponsors, our fine sponsors on the Buckmaster Show. And we're delighted that they're going to be taking part in the 6th annual Taste of Arizona Festival. Then Saturday, lots going on.
Yes. Well, Saturday, our friends over at Harlow Gardens are going to be welcoming one of Tucson's favorite chefs, Ramiro Scavo, for a chef demo. If your listeners aren't familiar, Ramiro was the executive chef over at Hacienda del Sol for a few years, but he recently made the jump over to Restaurateur and opened his new restaurant on University Boulevard. It's called Pasco Kitchen and Lounge. So it'll be a great opportunity to meet him and learn a few things. It's going to be at 2 p.m. at Harlow Gardens on Pima and Craycroft. It's just going to be a real treat for gardeners and foodies alike. I heard that Ramiro is going to be making a farmer's market salad that's going to be inspired by the garden, of course, and a non-alcoholic patio herb Collins, which is going to be made with freshly muddled cucumber and basil. So definitely food for summer, and I have no doubt that the guests are going to learn a lot from Ramiro.
We're listening now to Weekend Watch on the Buckmaster Show. Also Saturday, Morgan, we want to tell our listeners about the Festival of the Barrio. This is going to be going on in downtown Tucson in the old Barrio area behind Cushing Street. Calexico will be performing. That's from 2 to 8 p.m. That's a benefit for KXCI Radio. That is going on also tomorrow. Then Sunday, there's some big events as well.
Yeah, well, speaking of gardens, Tohono O'Toole Park is going to be hosting a garden party of sorts this Sunday evening called the Sonoran Spring Celebration. It's going to be from 4 to 8 p.m. and will feature live music and local artists auctioning off some of their works. And, of course, to the part that I like best, the food. Albert Hall has sort of corralled some of his friends over at other locally owned restaurants to provide samples of their cuisine at the event. And so those restaurants include Acacia, the guys over at Bluefin, Pastiche, and, again, the guys at Vero More are participating in this one. So that'll be a real treat.
So some of the other Tucson original restaurants taking part as well. Live auction is also planned there. Mm-hmm. Matt Russell, our friend, on the menu live. Do you know where Matt is going to be next Thursday?
Well, he's going to be talking to Tom Firth from Hacienda del Sol to chat about the upcoming Zen Blues and Barbecue event up at the Hacienda. And he's also going to be chatting with Sherry Thornton of Java Edge. And she's really known for helping to redefine the artistry of coffee in southern Arizona.
Morgan O'Crotty from Many Hats Advertising filling in for Matt Russell. And we do appreciate it. Have a great weekend, Morgan.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. That's going to do it for Weekend Watch. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by our friends at Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Great folks over there, especially tax season. Mike Flowers is going to be here in studio on Thursday about 9:30 to answer your tax tip questions live. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, on behalf of Team Buckmaster, producer Rosemary Brandt, and our marketing director, Deborah Howard. I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend.
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.